Well, the city of East Lansing prides itself as the home of the green and white, but take a drive along Grand River Avenue near the MSU campus on a Friday or Saturday night, and you're bound to see some flashes of red and blue as well. East Lansing police frequently contend with drunk drivers and other alcohol-related incidents. But the city is making some progress toward drying up the problem. Current State's Kevin Lavery joins me now to explain. Kevin, what can city officials do short of bringing back prohibition?
That is not going to happen anytime soon, Mark. The Constitution settled that decades ago. But back in September of 2014, East Lansing established a sobriety court. It's an intensive program based on rehabilitation, daily testing, and guidance from the courts. There are 50 people in total in the program. Yesterday, 11 of them became part of East Lansing's inaugural graduating class. District Court Judge Andrea Larkin oversees the sobriety court, and she tells me that alcohol is a significant issue in the city.
East Lansing actually has more drunk driving arrests than any city in the state of Michigan. Interesting considering how much smaller we are than many of the cities in the state of Michigan. In 2012, for example, we had 600 arrests in East Lansing. Ann Arbor had about 100. Kalamazoo had a little over 100. We apparently, and this is hearsay information on my part, but I have been told that East Lansing has more establishments that serve alcohol in a higher concentration in a smaller population area, so per capita, than any city in the state. When I got here at the beginning of 2013, it became apparent pretty quickly that drunk driving was one of the most frequent misdemeanor crimes that we saw, and that putting somebody in jail or fining them was not getting to the root of the problem.
I don't want to make a sweeping generalization, but the fact that we are a university town, and you say the high number of drinking establishments, there's a certain indiscretion of youth when you're college age, is that a big contributing factor? Although you did say that Ann Arbor, also a big college town,
yep,
has a proportionally much, much lower rate than we do.
Right. You know, I think that that's part of it. I don't want to make Michigan State University or East Lansing sound unusual in that respect. Interestingly, the average age of our participants in this court is 27. And I think one or two of them are in their 40s, which just shows you how young the rest of them are. But they don't come into the court just because they've been arrested for drunk driving. You have to have, in addition to the drunk driving arrest, it's generally more than one drunk driving arrest, and they also have to be assessed by a professional as someone who has a significant substance abuse disorder. And I, frankly, as the mother of three kids right around this age, was shocked to find out how many people that young have a significant substance abuse disorder. So I'm not sure that it's attributable to the number of drinking establishments. But, you know, there's a huge university, 50,000 students. I think it dwarfs our non-student population, and a lot of alcohol going around.
We're talking with the Honorable Andrea Larkin, who is a district court judge in East Lansing, about the city's sobriety court and the graduation this week. What is happening behind the scenes beyond physical detox and counseling that is helping these participants try to change their mental mindset about what they're doing?
That's an excellent question. It's so much more than just the detox. The court, which I am just the judge, I'm a lawyer by training. I'm not a substance abuse specialist or someone that's informed about how to cure addiction. The court runs with a team of people. There's our community partners, reality counseling, cognitive consultants. It's a rigorous program. They have to test four times a day initially with a handheld PBT device that they can take with them to work, they can leave on their nightstand. They have to test at certain prescribed hours. They have to regularly and frequently get tested for drugs. They have to go to counseling. Sometimes they are in inpatient rehabilitation, sometimes intensive outpatient. They have to go to AA a minimum of four times a week. Many go daily. They have to report to me every 2 weeks. They have to report to their probation officer every week. I'm sure I'm missing some things.
Well, you mentioned there's an outpatient component to this. Not everybody is in-house in a facility someplace. Because of that, is there expected relapse? And not that relapse is allowed, but is there an understanding that someone is not going to just stop cold turkey in the first week and that there's going to be some setbacks along the way?
Relapse is a part of recovery. And I've known people who are recovering alcoholics for decades who tell me that they have to make that commitment every single morning. So we deal with relapse in a compassionate and understanding way. What is not dealt with compassion, which is sanctioned more severely, for example, by some period of time in jail, is dishonesty to the court, forging documents, having somebody else test for you, although that's really hard since the testing device has a camera, blocking the camera, for example, dishonesty, missing tests, things that you should be able to control, like the timing of your testing, attending the counseling, attending the AA meetings. But relapse is part of the recovery process, and so that's dealt with additional counseling, with compassion, and with all of the treatment tools, rather than by a stay in jail.
So really anything less than a good faith effort is going to be frowned upon.
Right. That's an excellent way of stating it.
Obviously, it's too soon to tell if there's a recidivism rate for someone who's graduated from this program. It's brand new for East Lansing, but I'm sure, right? But I'm sure there's other places in the country that you have modeled this after. What do we know about, if recidivism is really the word? To me, that kind of goes beyond relapse. That's someone who really just continues their pattern even after they're out of a program like this.
The statistics are that 75% of the people who successfully complete a sobriety or treatment court program do not go on to reoffend, which to me is the best argument for this type of court of any. The other great argument for this type of court, and you asked me about people changing their lives earlier, and sure, at the beginning, there's all the testing requirements, et cetera. The fascinating thing, the inspirational thing, is when they achieve sobriety, after they've gone 3, 4, sometimes 5 months without having consumed alcohol or drugs, they stand up at the podium. I see them every 2 weeks in court and tell me about all of the different ways their lives are better. For the students, their grades are better. Some people have gotten their first meaningful job in a while. Some people have gotten more than one job. People repair family relationships. They get their health back. One young man who was graduating today went from the verge of bankruptcy to paying off every single debt that he had. He actually did the math on how much he had been spending before sobriety court on alcohol and was able to apply that to all of his debts. Never had anybody stand at the podium and say any negative consequences befallen them as a result of sobriety. So the recidivism rates and the ability to give somebody their life back are the two best arguments for this court.
So now that the inaugural program is over, what are some lessons learned? What are some rough edges that could be smoothed out, that could be improved upon? Maybe you had an aha moment and you say, you know, next time around, we're going to do this a little bit better.
Actually, the program's not over. It's over only for these 11 graduates. There are 50 people in the program, and they go through phases. Phase one is the most rigorous, the most testing. You cannot drive a car in phase one. Phase two, you get promoted to that with good performance in phase one, et cetera. And so I still, after graduation of 11, will have 39 more people. And then, unfortunately, for our community, I think, somebody gets arrested on a pretty regular basis, and the phase one group gets added to. So one thing that I have learned is that termination from the program should not be something that is done hastily or quickly. No matter how poorly somebody is faring, they're probably doing a lot better with the program than they were without it. I bet that well over 90% of the people that have started in our program have gone on to continue through the program. I've had a couple people who, after a very short period of time, just said, I would rather go to jail. I'm done. I don't want to stop drinking. I'm not going to do this. It's too much work. And I can't want it, and the team can't want it more than they can. But thankfully, I can think of only two examples of that right now. But not to dismiss somebody or terminate somebody from the program, no matter how much they're struggling, is probably the thing that I have learned the most since beginning this.
Do you think these participants have come to see your help and your influence as something beyond perhaps a scary authority figure in a robe and a gavel? And how do you feel about that role?
I certainly hope so. The teaching on sobriety court and treatment programs is that the role of the judge is critical, even though I'm the least well-trained person in the room in terms of addictive behavior and substance abuse training. I come to know these people. I know the ages of their kids. I know whether their parents are serious alcoholics. I know their living circumstances and the tragedies in their lives and the obstacles in their lives. I feel like we have a connection after a few months. It takes a while for them to start opening up to the judge, but I hope they view me as more than an authority figure. I have actually been brought to tears in the courtroom on occasion by people who have made a statement or written an essay about the profound effect that sobriety's had on their life. So I hope they view me as something much more than an authority figure, but I guess that would be a question best put to them. I hate to lose each and every one of them. I feel personally invested in their lives now.
That's a nice sentiment.
Thank you. It's absolutely true and from the bottom of my heart.
The Honorable Andrea Larkin is a district court judge in the city of East Lansing. She is the presiding judge for the city's sobriety court. Your Honor, thank you for having time for me. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It has been a pleasure talking with you too, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.